Thomas Cook has always been drawn to dark places for the powerful emotions they evoke and for what we can learn from them. These lessons are often unexpected and sometimes profoundly intimate, but they are never straightforward. During the course of a lifetime of traveling to some of the Earth's most tragic locales, he finds not only darkness but a light that can illuminate the darkness within each of us. He writes all of this in his new book, Even Darkness Sings, From Auschwitz to Hiroshima, Finding Hope in the Saddest Places on Earth. The book is published by Pegasus, and it's a pleasure to welcome Thomas Cook to the roundtable this morning. Thomas, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
What brought you to start this journey and ultimately wanting to write about hope in the saddest places on Earth?
I think simply the experience of them at the very beginning, and also just understanding how much it could bring to family life. I mean, basically, it's a plea to not go to Disneyland every single time, but to think of the family vacation a little bit differently, because the experiences that you have in dark places with your family are much, much richer. And I began to realize that when I was living in Spain, and my family and I began traveling all over Europe and North Africa, and we went to Auschwitz, and we went to other places like that, and I could just see it made a tremendous difference in the way that we interacted with each other. It just became richer and more serious, not more depressing. That's the main thing I want to say in this book, is that going to a dark place is really not depressing, because you can really begin, first of all, you see how lucky you are to have avoided some of these tragedies in your life. But the other thing is just to on the way to these places, you experience the journey itself, and that is enlightening, and it's full of experiences with other people, and you just come away with a certain hope. And then finally, historically, you just realize that progress really has been made in the history of human life. The kinds of things that, for example, Gilles de Rais did to little boys in France and got away with it for 14 years, that wouldn't happen now, because it's a better country. Those institutions that protected him no longer exist. And there really is human progress.
When it comes to the places themselves, what were you looking for? What were you ultimately trying to find when coming up with the places to go to?
Well, it really began as an homage, you know, an idea of really honoring what had happened in these places and what people had suffered. But as I began to think of it, and I really didn't think of it as a book. I mean, as you know, this is really decades of travel. But when I began to think about a book about this kind of travel, it struck me that you just couldn't go from one killing field to another. You just couldn't go from Auschwitz to Treblinka. There had to be another way of looking at human tragedy. So I came up with ideas about what kind of tragedies we experience. And that made places that did not seem in and of themselves sad or enlightening, both sad and enlightening. For example, in Verona, which is not really a sad place, I was actually dealing with romantic tragedy, not just the tragedy of things like concentration camps and murders and things like that, but the tragedy that people experience in their romantic lives. And so I went up to Denmark to see certain graves. I went to where Eloise and Abelard are buried in Paris, and I ultimately went to Verona, where the light came on, and I really understood what romantic tragedy is.
When it comes to tragedy and the idea that these are some of the saddest places on Earth, how open do you have to be personally to find the hope, to find the powerful, unexpected moments?
I sort of think that you don't really have to be prepared at all. Of course, it helps to know the history, but you would learn that in the place as well. But it really, these experiences that come within travel, really you can't prepare for them. They either appear or they don't. But I think the seedbed, you might say, is just to have a serious sense of life and not necessarily a depressing one at all, but just that life comes at you with both barrels. History can roll over you. That's really all you need to know. It's you don't have to have any sort of special preparation, I think, to go to a place like Verdun or Auschwitz. The place will, it will define itself for you. You don't need to push it.
In a place like Auschwitz, how do you understand? I mean, it seems to me that a lot is also left in how it's interpreted for you as well.
And the book deals with, you're right about that, and the book deals with places that don't handle the tragedies very well. For example, to me, the glaring example of that is the Tower of London, which really is a very dark place. If you look at the history of it, I mean, Lord Macaulay called the Royal Chapel inside the grounds there the saddest place on earth. He himself thought that. But when you go there, you see that it's been turned into a kind of Disneyland prison. And they have the Queen's jewels, and you can go in and buy some rationed products. And they have a huge emporium for sales, I think about three stories high, where you can buy all kinds of stuff. And kids just, you know, run around, and they jump around, and there's no effort made at all to give a sense of the darkness of the darkness of the place. And when that fails, it seems to me it dishonors what actually happened there. I do write about the Tower of London in that way.
I was struck by that because having visited, you're absolutely right. There is a Disneyland quality. It's a theme park. There's a lot of armor and so forth. You look at it and you think that it has a much more fun atmosphere, and it's really sitting down and learning the story that you become moved, but you have to find it.
You do, but it's also the way it's chosen to be presented. And I think in the case of the Tower of London, which is also, you know, let's face it, really overpriced. I mean, they've got a big ticket. That's a big ticket item in London if you're going with your family. And they just do it badly. One of the places that does it very, very well, I'm not sure that I wrote about it in the book, but it's Alcatraz. If you just go to San Francisco and take that boat over to Alcatraz, when I went there many years ago, it was beautifully presented. What you did was you had a tape, and the people who were on the tape, it's not some guide from the Forest Service, it's the voices of the prisoners themselves talking about what it was like. And I remember one of the stories was that on New Year's night, the prisoners would gather in the kitchen in the dining room, and they could actually hear the New Year's night revelers in San Francisco. And that always just struck me as incredibly poignant and something that you wouldn't necessarily get in the normal kind of guide. But they had done a very good job at Alcatraz.
You took much of this trip with your family, and was that an aspect of it too, that you were able to share it with them?
Oh, that was huge for me, and it really made an enormous impression on our daughter. She was 12 years old when we were doing a lot of this travel throughout Europe because we were living in Madrid, and she often tells me that those were the great experiences of her life. And when we took her at, I think, about 12 years old, about 13 maybe, we took her to Disneyland in Orlando, because there's nothing wrong with going to Disneyland. There's nothing wrong with having an entertaining vacation. You don't always have to go to a tragic spot. But she said to me later, actually she said just recently, she said to me, "I don't remember anything about Disneyland, but I remember everything about Auschwitz," you know, and those kinds of places. And it's just that they're deeper. And I began to see that in her, and to see that she was really enriched by these experiences. And now I have two grandchildren. She has two, with her husband, has two sons. And she's plotting, even as we speak, a way of getting her family to some sort of central location, probably in Europe, to do the same thing for her sons as my wife and I did for her.
Well, the name of the book is Even Darkness Sings. It is published by Pegasus. Thomas Cook, a great pleasure. Thank you very much for sharing with us this morning.
Thank you so much for having me.
Appreciate it. Thank you very much. Again, the name of the book, Even Darkness Sings, From Auschwitz to Hiroshima, Finding Hope in the Saddest Places on Earth. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.